WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to... What the heck's the name of this show?
The Raucous Caucus!
Of course, how foolish of me.
He's getting old and senile, Garland. I know.
It's going fast. It's the cheap booze. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus, gentlemen. I am Terry D. Kester on Raucous Caucus WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica with...
Mark Levine.
And with...
Hank Williams Jr. I mean, Garland Nixon.
You two have so much in common.
Are you ready for some...
Are you ready for some Obama, Hitler?
Never mind. Anyway.
You know, Terry reminds me of Mussolini. I'm just saying. I mean, that's what you know.
What? Is it the mustache? I was just going to say.
I'm just playing the Hank Williams Jr. role. You know, I'm working on that.
This is going to be an amazing show. I have no doubt whatsoever.
It's already starting low.
Pete O'Shea?
No, it is. It is.
I'm so. Here.
Yes. Hey.
Female voices. I'm excited.
We have. You know, I want you guys to know something. I went down to Washington, D.C. Sunday. I went down looking around and.
And you picked up two women.
Well, now there's a shot.
No, I found a little bit of hope. I don't want to be coming across as the optimist on the show.
Well, you never do.
But no. Okay, good.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about that, Terry.
I found a little bit of hope because I went around to some of the Occupy scenes and some of theirs. And
Occupy D.C.
Freedom and Plaza. You guys know that this is the, my notes here, 25th day that the Occupy has been going on, at least in New York. You probably know that in Boston, they arrested 100 people. They gave the Boston crowd 2 minutes to disperse and then charged in.
Plenty of time.
Two whole minutes.
Time.
That's about as much time as we're going to give you tonight, Mark. Just want you to know that.
I think your 2 minutes are up, Terry.
90 seconds, I thought. And in Chicago, they had supposedly over 1,000. And they arrested 26 teachers. I mean, I guess that's part of the new jobs program or something teachers. You know, you get them in the jail. And
plus, we get
them.
More cops this way.
Many more cops.
You got to hire guards. At
why don't you introduce our guests?
I think I will. Before they leave?
Yeah. So they can get a word in edgewise or try to.
Okay. The reason, well, there's a lot of reasons I brought these young ladies in or asked these young ladies to join is I happen to be listening to their presentation, I guess sort of a teach-in, I guess would be right to call it, and they are Nicole Errol. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you.
And Lauren Ellen McCann. Did I pronounce it all correctly?
You did, but you can call me L.
All right. We'll call you
L. We shall.
And they are both with the Sunlight Foundation, and they were hosting this incredible sort of a Who's Got the Money teach-in at one of the occupied sites.
Oh, who does have the money?
Well, not us.
We're going to find out,
not
right?
Not us.
We have a map. We have a map.
Oh, good. Like a treasure map. I like a scavenger hunt. That's great.
And I was impressed not only with their knowledge, but with their delivery, their style, their passion, everything. And I really, really want to say, you know, if we can get, if you guys are indicative, L and Nicole, if you are indicative of the people within this movement, then there's some real hope for change. There really is. We've been screaming on this show, take it to the streets, for a long time.
A long time.
And now it's happening a little bit anyway, and we want to talk about that. But also, I should give you a little more information. Nicole is the organizing director at Sunlight Foundation. She works on public online campaigns to engage supporters of transparency and open government. And she worked as an organizing for America and the DNC and the Obama campaign. And to her incredible credit, she was actually a teacher for a while.
Yep, middle school.
Middle school. The bravest people in the world.
Our middle school teachers.
You better believe it.
True story.
Yeah. And Lauren Ellen, or L, is the online organizer with the Sunlight Foundation. And prior to joining Sunlight, she worked in public media as a web producer for NPR. She was also a managing editor of NPR, in other words. And she's got a BA in government and a passion, it says here, a passion for the information commons.
It's like you're reading it off the website.
A passion. Well,
don't give away Terry's secrets. He doesn't like when you tell the secret
on
the air.
You just know me so well.
some cucumbers.
Do not look at the man behind the curtain. Yeah, I do not learn this.
I just ruined my entire image.
No, I feel so touched. Really.
10 years I've been broadcasting, and now people know that I read things.
Now everybody knows. Every show of yours
is
written
out. Isn't this about transparency, guys? Let's hear all about shining the light on
these
secrets.
Oh, that's what they do. They open the curtain. There you go. You invited two people.
Terry's finally been exposed.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, I've been exposed before, but that's another show.
But you're not going to get arrested for it this time. That's what I'm saying.
We don't want to get into that. Anyway, on the serious side, here you guys are. Here Ellen and Nicole out there are out in Occupy, D.C., and things are... What's the biggest issue floating around at the moment out there that you guys see? I mean, we want to be able to talk to you about your personal impressions as well as what you represent in Sunlight Foundation. So, but what you've seen so far, I'll start with you. What's the biggest issue that you see out there?
Well, one of the fascinating things about the occupation movement altogether is that they bring everybody who's there brings with them their own set of issues that are all related to this idea of trying to find their way through the system, whether it's because of class, whether it's because of transparency issues, finding the money, following that money. They're all looking at our political system and highlighting issues that the media has been talking about forever. But I think, I mean, as speaking as someone who used to work in media, it fell on deaf ears as far as we can tell for a while.
We know. We've been there.
Yeah, we've been there. Believe me. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, you've got six deaf ears right this room. They call the Raucous Caucus. Yeah.
We didn't hear a word you said, but we do lip read, so it's okay.
Thanks.
You know, Nicole, what do you think the biggest issue out there? I mean, is it a plethora of issues, or is there one thing that's really beginning to sing?
I think there's definitely everybody, like Lauren Ellen said, has sort of their own thing that they are bringing to the table. I think the big thing that people are highlighting is that there's a lot of problems with the system as it currently exists. And people have their own reasons for believing, you know, you go out there and you see, you know, 18 million different signs that have all different messages. But the fundamental thing that they're about is that there are problems with the system. And so what we are really excited about is people are finally saying, you know, we don't even know what all the problems are. We need to really highlight those problems, and then we can sort of move forward on a way to fix them. So we're really excited about the fact that, you know, transparency is sort of this underpinning thing that goes, you know, people are talking about the problems of money in politics. Well, what are they? We don't know unless we can see the money in politics.
Yeah, one of the things that I really did impress me in just walking around is the number of signs that saying simply, we're the 99%.
Yeah, that's definitely the driving message that everybody agrees on. And what you know, how that is defined is all these things.
Well, I would almost argue that you think they're upset now. If they actually find out where the money's going, they really will freak out.
Yeah, well, once you publish those maps, you might want to go. But my question is about the D.C. local movement, because obviously this began in New York, and then I heard about Boston. I only heard about D.C. fairly recently. And of course, I read an article in Washington Post today about whether or not they'll be allowed to stay on Freedom Plaza or not. I don't know if that's been worked out. But how long has the D.C. movement been there, and is there anything that's uniquely D.C. about it?
Yeah. So there's a lot of confusion about because there's a lot of sort of sharing of the Occupy DC hashtag, and that's how a lot of folks are finding out about this is on Twitter. The Occupy DC group has been here since October 1st, and it sprang up out of direct solidarity with what's happening in New York. Those are the folks who are at McPherson Square. The people at Freedom Plaza are actually a separate group.
Totally separate.
Yeah, that started out, and they've sort of mixed messages a little bit at this point, and so there's a little bit more overlap.
What's the difference? Are they both?
They're organized by totally separate people. The one on Freedom Plaza started as an anti-war rally, and that was planning to start on October 6th. And then when
months.
Yeah, they've been planning this for months and months. So when the Occupy thing happened, they were like, oh, hey, well, we're occupying too, and our message is related. But it's not the same thing as the Occupy K Street. And the thing that we think is really cool about the Occupy K Street is we showed up there the first day to just kind of check it out and see what was going on. And people had these signs that said, the money from Wall Street flows to K Street.
That's very interesting. It's interesting how they focus on the streets, because obviously Wall Street, we all know what that's for. In Washington, people know K Street means lobbying. And so if in New York they're focusing on illicit gain to the money, you're focusing how that illicit money gets to the politicians.
Exactly. Yeah.
Through lobbying.
Right. They've been focusing darn near on everything that has anything to do with money and politics from the amount of the school that I went to just listening to you guys. It was incredible. I'm extremely knowledgeable. And, you know, one of the things that I caught, again, at the very end, we were just talking about it before the show, is your concern with the super committee. So let's kind of begin with that as one of the money problems that's going to be facing all of us and that's facing government. And some of the points that you were making, Nicole, on the super committee.
Yeah, oh, we would love to. So So the Super Committee is that's sort of the nickname for it. It was developed as the committee that came out of the compromise on the budget deal.
Right.
So they are tasked with cutting $1.5 trillion from the deficit, and they have to have their recommendations in basically the next 6 weeks, and then Congress is going to have to make an up or down vote on it. Congress is not going to be able to go through any of the normal procedural things that they do. So the normal representation that you have, whether you think it works or it doesn't, you don't even get that.
Yeah, what representation?
I don't actually think the Super Committee is going to work. I don't think they're going to come to agreement at all, but I don't know. Maybe you disagree.
Well, they might or they might not, but the problem is that they've been doing almost all of their work in secret.
That's true.
They've had like two public meetings or maybe three at this point, but they have not disclosed any of their campaign contributions. They have not disclosed who they're meeting with, the lobbyists that they're meeting with. So we really have no idea who's trying to influence them. And it's to the point where, you know, we know that this stuff is happening. A lobbyist actually said in a Reuters article a while ago that the lobbying wars are comparable to the Crusades between defense and healthcare. Yeah, so this is serious. They are spending some serious money.
Big corporations might lose money, they're going to have to fight really hard.
So everything's operating as normal in D.C. We have we're looking at some very serious legislation and some where the money's going to be spent. And we have the lobbyists and the big corporations fighting it out. Of course, all the people out here, we can't even know what's happening.
We'll know when the battle's done. Yeah, we'll get to see where the bodies are buried. We will know whether the
question is whether the corporations win, you know, or the lobbyists win, or
which corporations win. The healthcare corporations, right. The military right. contracting corporations.
Well, no. The one thing we know
which
for sure.
corporation will get the taxpayer welfare.
Once we're standing in the soup lines, we're going to be able to find out, you know, who's in charge now.
Nicole and Al will be able to let us know.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what the Super Committee is doing. We don't know where they're getting. Do you have any figures on the money that's been flowing to them at all?
Well, because there's no special transparency regulations on them, they're not going to disclose any of their campaign contributions until January.
So, and there's 12 of them. Have they gotten job offers from Boeing and everybody else?
I guarantee you.
Yeah, right. Just let your imagination go wild.
The revolving door of politics.
No more than normal.
No more than normal.
The normal.
Now, what's interesting, though, is
they're family members.
They're all family. Everyone's family.
Yeah. Right.
But a few of the members have tried to do a little bit of fake transparency by offering not to take any fundraise. They're not going to fundraise while they're on the Super Committee, which is all well and good, except that that doesn't mean that they can't still receive money. Or, you know, there were 36 fundraisers scheduled for the next 3 weeks for Super Committee members. The money's still coming in.
Fundraisers in the last couple weeks.
The truth of the matter is they don't have to fundraise when they're on the Super Committee.
People are shoveling money in their feet.
Why bother?
You should do. Just take pictures of the wheelbarrows of money. Why bother? It would be redundant.
These are also just the fundraisers that we know about. Right. We actually have a site where we track all of the fundraisers that we can find. It's politicalpartytime.org. So those are just, you know, those are the ones that people send to us.
Let me ask you this. There's so little regulation there, particularly since this is in June. United case, but there is some, apparently. They do have to file in January. Is this like quarterly reports? Is that what this is, 6 months report? What are the regulations now that the meager ones have to follow?
That matter.
They do have to disclose their campaign contributions on a quarterly basis.
Quarterly basis.
The thing that Citizens United did was allow sort of unlimited outside money coming in from corporations and unions into things called
Don't
super
say in unions. That ticks me off. I'm sorry. You know, because I know it's true legally, but that's like, you know, everybody gets the impression somehow that the unions and the corporations are somehow
equal. Unions don't do it secretly, for one thing.
Right. Like,
they're very proud of the things they do.
Unions don't have anywhere near the money or power.
And
or
they represent people, not legal fictions.
And I'm not criticizing you, Nicole. I don't mean that at all. But just that idea of we always say corporations and unions.
We don't always say that.
What? Garland.
Well, Garland, you say that.
No, but I could start if you don't
have
anybody else to say it.
We have tools that you can look up to see exactly how much the unions are giving as compared to the corporations.
A lot less.
Go ahead and give us your website and tell us about, because I notice on your website, I mean, you do have this incredible amount of information out there. So give us a little awareness of that.
Sure. Well, you can follow that money at reporting.sunlightfoundation.com has got a database that we call Follow the Unlimited Money. So you can actually go in and look up, the independent expenditures from PACs and super PACs and all of those different things at reporting.sunlightfoundation.com.
And how long has the Sunlight Foundation been around?
We are 5 years old.
Okay. Five and a half,
because we aged in April.
All right.
And our co-founders are Mike Klein and Ellen Miller. Ellen's our executive director.
Okay. And since y'all are, of course, the transparency folk, mm-hmm. Where's your money coming from?
We disclose all of that. You can actually go to sunlightfoundation.com/funding and see everything.
Most individuals that just care about...
Our primary funder is actually the Amidyar Network, but then we are usually grants. The Amidyar Network, Pierre Amidyar is actually one of the co-founders of eBay, and then he's gone on to make an enormous foundation that contributes money elsewhere into mm-hmm. interesting projects like ours, particularly those that use technology and the internet to achieve their ends. So we're very focused on using technology in our transparency work. But, I mean, as for other funding, we're usually funded by grants for specific projects, and mm-hmm. all of those are disclosed.
Bravo.
Well, I'm just making sure we don't have hypocrites here.
Yeah, sure.
These are not hypocrites. They look very nice, but you never know.
It's all News Corp money.
They're not running for office, so it's quite possible they're not hypocrites.
No,
you know. I think they're way above
that. So now, you said that the movement in D.C., I mean, this is the movement McPherson Square. Now, are you organizing it? Is someone else organizing it?
They're
is
not
this like 100 people who just believe that the other 99% need representation just coming out and all congregating? Kind of, it reminds me sort of the Arab Spring in Tahrir Square. People are like, we want Mubarak to go. We want Wall Street to go.
Yeah.
So people just show up, and your organization does, and lots of other people.
That's a bad image considering what's happening in the
square
in
Egypt
right now.
Hopefully we're going to do better than that. Yeah. But how many people are showing up? What kinds of organizations? What are we seeing out there? Should people join them right now?
Wow, that was a lot of questions.
Okay. Yeah, right. Answer all of them. You have 1 minute.
Yeah, we got till 8 o'clock.
You just pick the one you want to
answer. Yeah. Well, Sunlight's a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, so we're not organizing anything. We're there
except for the teach-in.
But so we're there because people are interested in our issues, which are lobbying, campaign finance reform, these transparency issues, and it's so fantastic to engage with people, everyday people on those things. So as long as we have tools that we can provide and bring that information to bear, that's why we're there. We're also there as individuals, so we have been attending the general assemblies where we've noted, transitioning to another question, that
She's doing so well. She's a pro.
Watch out, guys. Watch out.
But hint, don't mention the segues when you speak. It's
I just wanted the appreciation.
All right.
You've got it. You've got it.
we've noticed, guys, come on, that it is totally decentralized organizing, which we're organizers. It's very, very different from what we do. This is very consensus-driven in a genuine fashion, and you have to be patient, and it's really democratic, and at first that kind of drives you nuts, and then after a while it becomes beautiful and you enjoy watching it. That's grown from when it was first started. There were maybe, you know, like 15 to 20 people there, only two sleeping overnight.
Well, there were like 100 people at the first meeting last Saturday.
At the first meeting, yeah. But like consistently, if you were to drop by in a random hour, but now there's easily, it's, I don't know, I can't even estimate.
Hundreds of people?
I'd say it's, we're clearly not there 24/7 because we're here right now.
I understand.
And we spend most of our time in the office. I'd say I've seen it be around 200 a few times.
So this is something that anyone listening to our voice right now can
should go out
and join 24/7. I mean, you can go in the middle of the night. You can go any
day.
Yeah. Just go to McPherson Square and join in with your support.
Yeah. What are the major sites? McPherson Square and Freedom Plaza?
Freedom Plaza is a separate thing. Yeah.
So the focus on the corporate money is McPherson Square.
If you want to get in on the good stuff, you go to McPherson Square.
Okay. You know, one of the things that really impressed me there, and I'm sure you guys noticed it too when I was down there, is the free food thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
wait a minute! Did you say free food?
Mark and I are there, buddy. I knew it.
Oh wait, I hear a stampede of people now.
Right. Hey, look,
just
guys,
from outside the studios, where are all those people running?
You got an extra mic here. I'll catch you guys next week. I gotta run them down.
Tell us about the free food.
They have hummus and you know.
Do you see how hard it is to have an intelligent conversation with these guys? I've been working on this for years. You know, I mean,
you could get them to show up just by offering free food. Yeah.
Tell us about the food.
So, not to steal our coworker's story, but he likes to describe the evolution as this. Well, so first of all, they create subcommittees to handle all these different things. So it actually is like a committee that's focusing on providing food for everyone who's there. And at first, they just got a lot of bread because it's all based on donations. And then they're like, we could really use some peanut butter. So they got peanut butter. And slowly it became, then there was a table for the food. Then there was a guy tending the table. And next thing you know, now it is a, like a fully tented area. Somebody's cooking food live.
Wow.
There's like
it's full selection. Wow.
They cater to your allergies.
Really?
So
if I'm allergic to peanuts, I mean, just go to the far end of the table.
Yeah. They actually have a – they've started a hashtag that's Occupy DC Needs, and I think there's actually a Twitter account for it now too. And so they just actually say whatever they need in terms of food or supply donations at any point, and people – and they just – they tweet it, and then it just appears.
It just appears kind of like quantum physics, you know, of particles
appear. Better. It's better because it actually involves people. I mean, I was talking to some of the guys, and it was just amazing. I mean, they're – like they were as astounded – as I was or anybody else coming up to it, that this food keeps on arriving, you know, and it's all donated. I mean, there's all kinds of support behind this thing that people don't even see.
I thought for years there was this underlying resentment about what was going on Wall Street, what was going on with the corporations, and, you know, the three of us have been talking about taking the street for 4 years now, and it just seems like when people get together and work together, magic occurs, and it just
My understanding was that Terry actually went down there with, like, a few fishes and some bread, and he started breaking them and fed, like, 400 people.
Stuck his finger to a reflecting pool, get your
scriptures correct. 5,000 is what we fed. Yeah.
Did you read that one on the internet too?
These are not my friends.
They've already learned how to be raucous. That's good. Yeah, that's a good sign.
It's okay. One of our coworkers just came back from New York because she wanted to go check that out, and she said that she took 2 yoga lessons while she was at Occupy New York, or Wall Street. So
we haven't got that in D.C. yet.
You should go lead one.
We will, believe me. Well, you know, I mean,
actually, if yoga's required, I may not show up.
I was about to say.
The food line is about as far as I go. Not so much. Right.
I got one difficult question for you. I was just talking to one of my colleagues before the show who was down there this morning checking things out. And he was surprised at how it had fallen off. And, you know, we hypothesized, well, you know, the younger people have to go to classes or whatever. But he was really kind of a little bit discouraged by the lack of people.
I'm sure it grows over weekends and
ebbs and flows.
It's really dependent on the time of day that you get down there. And I don't think that it's really falling off at all. I heard a rumor today that there is now an Occupy Iowa happening in about 4 different cities in Iowa and an Occupy Wyoming.
Wow.
So it's.
Are there enough people
smaller
to occupy Wyoming?
There's only six people there.
They're importing
you can bring some
Colorado
paddle in, yeah, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah, right. That's what they're protesting. There's not enough people there to get it.
Please occupy Wyoming.
Yeah, right.
Somebody occupy.
So tell us some of the themes that you've seen there. We know the basic sort of corporate 99%. Is that mostly the message? So it's not like an amalgam of everything from... I mean, liberal causes I support, you know, pro-choice or environmentalism, or people are mostly focusing on globalization.
Economics.
Yeah, and I think that there's definitely people from a variety of different causes who are sort of trying to figure out how to plug in and support and also, you know, take advantage of the energy around things that everyone sees as being interconnected. And folks are still figuring that out right now. But I think that, and it sounds very different, and the pictures that I've seen of New York are very different. I haven't been up there yet. But in D.C., something that I think is really interesting to note is there's almost no signs that aren't handmade. Sorry, I shouldn't have done that many negatives. But almost all the signs are handmade, which is kind of a really cool thing to see.
Well, it's good for now. We'll see how long it lasts before someone tries to co-opt it.
I think it's going to have to, at some point, turn into, like, Occupy America. I think, we talk about Arab Spring, but there's something very different here. It was very clear. Their goal was very clear, and it was very simple, you know, get rid of Mubarak. It was really, really, a very pointed
It didn't start that way.
But what I'm saying is this. But here... You know, the goals are somewhat amorphous. You know, people are...
You mean we're not going to get rid of corporations?
Well, it's a thought.
Yes, by Thursday.
By Thursday,
all corporations should be gone.
I think they're going to need, as a group, it's going to have to unify at some point, and they're going to have to get some leaders. You know, the way it is now, it's just kind of, it's going to float. And at some point, if it doesn't unify and become, and get some leaders, then it's just going to...
Well, you know,
be able to go anywhere.
I mean, people always compare it to the Tea Party. I don't know if the Tea Parties have any leaders. No, look, there is. Look, obviously they don't agree on the same goals, but and the Tea Party was definitely pushed by certain people in the media. But there is a truth that there are grassroots Tea Party members. I'm not going to deny that. I don't agree with them, but it was a grassroots movement. This is a grassroots movement. They don't have any leaders. I don't know that we need. I mean, it's okay to have several leaders. What I wouldn't want to see, though, is a bunch of people battling, and pursuing their own individual agendas when we all have a single agenda, which it relates to everything: money and politics, lobbying, corporations, globalization, the economy.
That's happening. That's what I saw.
Darn, and I was going to suggest me as the leader. Well, carry on.
I think the raucous caucus. Yeah. It's raucous. It's a caucus.
Yeah, right. What more can you?
Those are our people. Yeah, that's the caucus.
Exactly. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say. I mean, not to be too cheesy, but there is a phrase in organizing that I've heard a lot around the Occupy K Street folks, and I've heard it before, but it appears to be very true, which is that this is not a leader-less movement; it's a leader-full movement.
There you go.
And there's just a ton of people who are stepping up and taking leadership positions, and I think that was totally true of the Tea Party. Also, the Tea Party actually has some fantastic organizing structures in terms of if they realize that a neighborhood or some place has not been tapped, they say, okay, if you believe in this, you be our leader and you go sort of organize that area.
Yeah. What I saw down there, which really amazed me, was two things. One, I mean, the unifying factor that you seem to see that's happening and becoming clear and clear is we're left out and we know it. We're the 99% and we are simply left out. We're left out politically. We're left out economically. We're left out in terms of influence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that seems to be sort of coalescing. That's my observation. The other thing that surprised me, though, was the number of – I mean, every time you picked up a flyer or a piece of paper, it had another website and another group that basically was joining the movement. And they just seemed to be – escalating constantly. It was phenomenal.
Let me throw something else up out there since we're talking about the Tea Party. Why is the Tea Party effective? For one reason and one reason only. Because Republican politicians are afraid that they will lose their jobs, be it in the primary or whatever the case may be. They're afraid of a significant block of voters. That's what scares them. I believe that with this movement, that if they don't have, that's why I say if they don't have some unity, if they cannot produce something tangible, and I mean like a significant block of voters, that will put the fear of God, as it were, into politicians, they will be ignored. Politicians will say, hey, I'm getting money from this person. These guys, who knows if they vote, if they don't vote. They can't say to me that if you don't do what I want, that you're going to suffer in the primaries. So,
that's key.
Let me hear what Nicole and I'll think about that.
Think you could argue that they don't really care if politicians respond. A lot of these people, we are talking about using the language of the system with capital letters, but if they think the system's broken, then they're going to start creating systems that work for them. So a lot of, there's actually some great commentary by Matt Stroller on this, that the occupation movement is just creating public spaces that work for them, that operate in this kind of like free giving economy, and that as much as they are the product of dissatisfaction and anger, it's not an angry movement. It's a very friendly, open space, and that's a way in which it's very unique and kind of, to me, demonstrates that they're not gearing up for 2012. They're not getting ready. They're showing other ways of living.
I don't know, in one way, I think that's wonderful. It reminds me of the 60s, which was before my time. Terry was, I don't know what drugs you were on then.
Neither did he. Terry has no idea. Right.
I understand that free love was good. But anyway, it reminds me of
it
this.
It was free?
You got ripped off.
Again.
Terry, I apparently paid for it. But my point is that, look, it's wonderful. I love the free food. I love the bongos. I love the spirit of communality. It's great. We need to use our public spaces more to have communities come together, people talk to each other. I'm always amazed that, the British have Speaker's Corner at Hyde Park where they argue with each other. And we have so many great public spaces, particularly in this city, Washington, D.C., and a lot of times people come in to Washington, they do their march for whatever, and then they leave. And the idea of having these community come together, talk to, I think that's great. However, if they're not gearing up for 2012, if they see the political system is so fundamentally broken that they're not going to vote, they're not going to register to vote, they're not going to fight against these laws that are preventing young people from voting, then they're going to get someone who's not very fond of that movement, that is me, because I want the community and the free food's great. But if you don't, I agree with Garland, if you don't actually move it into some way to affect political change, then I think the happiness may well turn to anger and despair and cynicism.
Yeah, we've got to take a break. We've got to take a break here. We'll pick up on
Nicole's
that.
Nicole's dying to respond to me.
I know. Nicole's ready.
And me too. I'm dying to respond to it. I got big things to say.
Yeah, but this is WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. This is the Raucous Caucus, as you may have guessed by listening to us this evening. And I am Terry DeKester with
Mark Levine.
And Garland.
Shea Guevara.
Garland Nixon.
Yeah. And we have some great guests with it, which we will introduce when we return in just a moment to the Raucous Caucus.
This is an on-air notice concerning proposed amendments to the Pacifica bylaws. On December 1st, 2011, the Pacifica National Board will meet by telephone to consider proposed amendments to the Pacifica bylaws. The meeting will be streamed live and archived at www.kpftx.org. The full text of the proposed bylaws amendments can be found at www.pacifica.org. Along with background information on the proposals, as well as additional information about the bylaws amendment process. The Pacifica National Board is comprised of members from each of the Pacifica radio stations. Pacifica members are encouraged to contact their local station boards with any questions or concerns about the proposed amendments. The WPFW Local Station Board can be reached via email at wpfw.lsb@gmail.com.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus. And we are back. This is the Raucous Caucus. I am Terry DeKester, and I'm here with two wonderful, wonderful ladies, and also, unfortunately, with my co-host. Yeah.
Mark Levine, I'm still here. Stop looking at the ladies. And focus, Terry.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
this stutter is a problem.
He was just into the night. That was it.
That's it, man. He was grooving. He was breakdancing over there. You didn't see that, Mark?
He's still upset about not getting that free love in the 60s.
Yeah, man.
And
Garland Nixon, for a change.
Thank you. Okay, good. Those are our co-hosts here on the Raucous Caucus. This is WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. It is a privilege to be with you guys. Again, we got to do one little thing, though. We got to thank all of those who contributed just a couple weeks back during our pledge drive. We really thank you for
supporting. And we're going out to dinner with a lot of you who pledged $100 or more. You will be getting phone calls from us.
You will be getting phone calls, and we will be having dinner, and we'll be calm.
And then you can just tell. We will be calm?
Wow.
People don't pay for calm,
no,
Terry.
No, they don't. They don't. Okay. And besides these two guys here, we've got these wonderful people who I found, discovered, I don't know what happened, but they were down in during Occupy Now, not Occupy Now, but Occupy DC, and they're with the Sunlight Foundation, and they were doing a teach-in on economics that would frankly put us to shame, guys. I mean, they had
that's not a real difficult task to put us to shame.
Yeah, right. But really, she's
Speak
really got
for
the,
yourself.
She really had the numbers and everything else right there for us, and I would like at some point for us to get a little bit of some of that hard
of that.
Facts in there.
Oh, gosh. Not hard facts.
I know.
This is talk radio. For God's sake.
You just make it up.
Yeah.
We're trying
33% of statistics are made up anyway.
This is not Glenn Beck. You know, this is not Rush Limbaugh. This is the Raucous Caucus. We're built on integrity and sagacity, guys. Try to remember
integrity
that.
And sagacity.
Sagacity I'm for, but integrity, still in question.
Anyway, our guests are Nicole Arrow and Lauren Ellen McCann, or L. McCann, and they are with the Sunlight Foundation.
And Nicole was dying to answer my question.
Yes, she
and
was.
We cut her off.
We had to. FCC
so
rule.
I basically challenged her, saying that all this happiness and light and free food and community is great, but if we don't harness that to actually take back America, to use it for some political change, then I'm going to go from being a fan to not being a fan of this movement. So
he's very fickle.
But in a couple days, he'll be back.
And all it takes is the free food to get you back.
That's pretty much it.
Pretty much.
You were comparing it to the Tea Party movement, and I think one thing to keep in mind is it took a while to shake out for the Tea Party movement and to see what the Tea Party movement was going to be, and it eventually became something that became an electoral force. I don't think we know what this is going to be or can be yet, and so I think that's one thing that people, it's very tough for Americans to be patient, but I think in watching what this movement is or can
hurry
be
up
whatever,
explain no I'm
but I think having been to the space and having watched people engage in, you know, the People's Mic and the General Assemblies and this consensus-based decision-making process, if the worst thing that comes out of this is people having participated in an experience of direct democracy and feeling value and engagement in that, that is not a bad thing.
No,
at
that's
all.
Not a bad thing. I just want more.
It's the other thing you're going sort of beginning to go. We're going beyond the permits, which I think is crucial to any kind of movement. I mean, the whole idea in this country that you have to get a permit to petition our government, basically, if there's more than six of you, is
absurd. You're
going to
make me pull out my constitution again, aren't you?
No, you don't have to pull out. Our listeners have heard this
before. He actually has a pocket constitution.
Yes, he does.
Well, you think he does.
With a purple feather on it.
Yeah, I mean, he actually makes up most of the stuff in there, too.
He wrote it himself, in fact. It's his imaginary constitution.
I was there in those constitutional conferences.
You know what? I believe that.
I know that, yeah. But, I mean, it really does irk me that we have to get permits for everything, you know, for it. I mean, I understand it in terms of protecting some of the parkland, but it's gotten to the point of, you know, you have to be approved before you can voice something. You have to be approved before you can, as somebody put it in one of the columns in the Washington Post today, and in fact it was Eugene Robinson, about this whole issue, is we have a soft police state.
Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. That's no law. That means no law.
Does it say Citizens United in there?
Citizens United has now decided that
the
money is free speech.
The word corporation is not in this.
It's not
little
in the Constitution?
It's not in the Constitution. It's not the Bill of Rights. It's not the Declaration of Independence.
Look in the index.
Mitt Romney says they're people. So,
Well, that's a good place to get some facts and information. I mean, you're very much aware of the whole Citizen United fiasco.
Not everybody knows. We repeat it all the time. But tell us, how does it affect
us?
You didn't get this time? I got yelled at about unions.
So do we have to do the recap for listeners about what
don't forget the long story.
Our listeners are very sharp.
The cliff notes, about 2 years ago, Supreme Court decided in Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission, FEC, that unlimited spending can go into elections and that corporations have the power of speech. So where it comes into interest for us is that as it relates to super PACs and these entities that have been created as agents within elections that are able to have all this flood of spending into the system.
I like to look at it like this. They decided that money equals speech. Mm-hmm. Money and speech are the same, according
George
to Citizens
Will
United.
Claims that's always
and
been true.
And they said that multinational corporations, I mean, you know, the Chinese can actually outfund Americans just by putting that money in a corporation.
Sure. If General Electric's got all that facilities over there
true.
And all those plants.
Because the Democrats tried to actually at least modify the ruling by saying, all right, corporations have all this unlimited money. At least disclose, right? Okay, so maybe we're owned by Exxon, but at least Exxon, tell us you're our masters and overlords. You know, at least we know that you're spending $1 billion on Mitt Romney,
but
whatever
the question
you're doing.
Is,
and, of course, that did not pass. Republicans filibustered it because they believe in secret, unaccountable government.
So what has Citizens United actually gained already? How much money have they got out there? Do you have any idea at all? I mean, not Citizens United, but, I mean, the whole now that
corporate
the
secret
with the PACs and everything.
It's a hard thing. So the way that it's sort of currently working, yeah, it's a really hard thing to know. And if you guys, Colbert has actually done a really hilarious segment explaining how money can go from his anonymous shell corporation, which he has called the anonymous shell corporation, into a C4, which, you know, a ton of nonprofits have legitimate C4s. So that goes into the C4s. The C4s don't have any disclosure requirements, really, that are meaningful at all. So you can essentially shuttle unlimited amounts of money from a corporation into a C4. A C4 can give it to a super, what's called a super PAC. And PACs, for listeners who are not total campaign finance nerds, it's a political action committee that can sort of spend money on.
And for those listeners who don't know what a C4 is.
I don't even actually know.
See for yourself.
No,
see for yourself.
It's
a part of Internal Revenue Code.
It's a 501c4 is sort of.
That's the
it's
section
a corporate
numbers.
Classification, but in the same way that a nonprofit is a corporate classification as a 501c3.
Let me just say this. And a C3 cannot do endorse political candidates, et cetera. And a C4.
That's why we never do.
A C4 can do a lot of electioneering. They can do, you know, voter, you know, sort of educational type ads, things like that.
Yep.
And if you guys, I don't know if you guys, you know, it doesn't look like we have some particular jocks in here, but if you guys ever watch football games, I mean, the advertising that you're seeing already on football games is incredible, and I assume that's by some of these packs. I mean, they have these vague, wonderful names like, you know, Citizens for God and Country or whatever.
Oh, I'm already seeing, like, you know, Stop Obamacare before your grandmother dies.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Like, it's like, yeah, allowing granny to pay for health care, that'll kill her.
Yeah.
Because she's so used to not being able to pay that.
And let's face it, she already has Medicare. Shouldn't that have killed her by now? Yeah. I've always
that's
wondered
true,
about
that's
that.
That's socialized
she's Medicare. For, I don't know how long.
Good point.
But now it's going to kill her all of a sudden.
But this really is happening already. I mean, people have got to be aware of it. You're seeing these ads on television on a regular basis during the World Series, not the World Series, but the playoffs, and during the football games, et cetera, that it's some vague corporation or vague organization's name.
Here's my rule. If they won't disclose who they are, I'll just make it up.
But it's
this is done by Kaiser.
But the thing to realize is in direct support of specific candidates.
Right, right.
You know, which we're not even aware of. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to riff on that point. We actually created a super PAC name generator because the names are so bland and so generic that you have no idea who they're behind.
Citizens for Happiness and Goodness.
Yeah, everything from that, you know, Americans for American America, Americans for Puppies. And, you know, it's totally random to say that we created
America for America.
America for America.
I like that.
But in the course of having this thing live, actually a few super PACs emerged that had names that, like, were generated within the system. So we ended up having to go through and tag them and be like, this is actually a real PAC.
So, but you actually do have a list of these on your
American Prosperity.
Absolutely.
All right.
So is there any way whatsoever – I'm sorry, go on.
No.
You're sorry? You apologize?
What I was going to say earlier,
there's some very nice people in the room.
I know, but it's not over on this side of the table.
I wouldn't apologize normally. Yeah. You know that.
We know that.
Yeah. Go ahead,
I never actually said what
Garland,
I was going
to
say
get
earlier.
To the point, Garland.
Oh, okay.
Speak, Garland.
I didn't say this earlier when we were actually talking about it, and that is this. You know, my model, for obvious reasons, is always the civil rights movement. And I think earlier what Mark and I were talking about was, basically, is this movement going to be people who feel good and go home and feel they felt good? Or in the civil rights movement, it was people who felt good because they walked into LA and I got hit by sticks. They didn't feel that good, but they felt good about what they were doing.
Solidarity.
Yeah. But they recognized the importance of working both inside and outside the system, that at some point you got to have a suit and tie on and you have to address the people if you really want to change things. So the question is, it has to be.
It took Martin Luther King and Lyndon Johnson to get changed.
You know, ultimately, is this or should this be a movement that says we don't like the way things are and we're going to be effective to change it, or do they say we came together, we hugged each other, we felt good, we went home, and now it's back to our flipping pizzas and trying to pay our school loans, which we can't.
Well, you know, and I just want to make a point that I don't think that either of us made earlier, which is that we're not spokespeople for this movement. There is no, like, spokespeople.
Oh, you're not?
No, surprise.
That's what Terry told us.
Terry?
All these lies, my goodness.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, what exists now is still pretty young. So I think a lot of the forecasting that's being done is looking into a future that we might not be able to actually determine.
Terry goes, it doubles the average age, but
I try to. Well, somebody's got to be mature around here. But, you know, that's a very good point. It truly is, because, I mean, even the way you were talking about the Civil Rights Movement, you can't talk about the Civil Rights Movement unless you're talking back into the 40s and even earlier than that.
Oh, definitely earlier than that.
It was patterned after Gandhi's Free India Movement.
Yeah, but even Gandhi, you know, I mean, that wasn't in, what, until 1950 or something like that, when that really became when England finally gave up. India. But I mean, it is in it's very, very early. And I think there's actually a danger in what we're doing here, because Americans, as you guys pointed out, Nicole and Elle pointed out just a moment ago, are very impatient. And so we're sitting back on the media with all these expectations. And if you read some of the columnists in the papers, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. It's going to save the country. It's going to save the world. It should do it by Thursday.
You're afraid that in 2 months people will be disappointed that we haven't changed anything.
You know, I mean, the reality is, which I think I certainly know, because unfortunately, yes, I'm a little bit older and I experience some of it, until somebody frankly gets shot. I hate to even say that, but until people start getting clubbed, you've got school teachers being arrested, now you've got 100 people being
people
arrested.
Sprayed.
Well, you know,
sprayed.
Let's hope
you
it's know, just pepper spray, because interestingly, the pepper spray...
But I mean, that's the key.
But that is what got this protest noticed. Nobody noticed they were occupying Wall Street, at least not in the mainstream media, until some New York police officers got a little frisky.
I don't want to scare people off, but I hope people are getting courageous in this movement, realizing there's going to be some cost to it. You know, it's not just about sleeping out on the lawn. I mean, the weather's going to start raining tonight, right?
Right.
Okay, now what?
Well,
you know? I mean, you know, I was there, you know, last Saturday night and last Sunday night. I did not sleep over. I have not done that. But I was there sort of with the people until pretty late into the night who were going to sleep over, and it was, you know, 40 degrees and raining last Saturday and Sunday, and there were people sleeping out, and they were a lot less prepared and a lot fewer people than there are tonight. So, I actually have a lot of faith in their ability to figure this stuff out on their own. And I think one of the things that's actually really cool about this is that a lot of organizing, you know, for various movements and changes culminates in a rally mm-hmm. or a march or something like that. There's some big, flashy, one-time mm-hmm. thing, and then everybody goes home. And one of the reasons that I think that people should really be patient with this is these are folks who, you know, are fully prepared stay there.
It reminds me of the apartheid movement. I remember when in college when people would have the shanty towns. Mm-hmm. The effective thing about that kind of protest is that it's not a one-time thing. You don't have a march mm-hmm. and you go home. It's a persistent thing where every time you go out into, you know, the center of campus, you see the shanty town. You're always thinking about apartheid. It's always there. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to go away until there's some real changes. And so just that persistence, I think, is very important. And I think it's the reason the Arab Spring has worked where it has worked.
Persistence and courage.
And we've already, one of the things that we are so excited about is that we already have seen a change in that, A, people talking about campaign finance reform and disclosure and mm-hmm. lobbyists, you know,
crazy.
People do generally not wake up and go protest lobbying disclosure and lobbying reform. I mean, that's just not something that on a daily basis, and we know because we look for it because this is what we do and talk about and care about all day long. People are doing that. And so at the very least, something has changed. People are talking in concrete ways. The mm-hmm. media is talking about it, which, you know, they don't nearly enough as far as we're concerned. And everyday people are talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's really, that is a very cool change.
People
and we hope
talk
that
more
is
about American Idol than C4s. You're kidding.
That is one thing that really impressed me when I was down there. I mean, there were probably 50, 60 people listening to Nicole. No microphone, no amplification, doing a great job. Great voice, by the way. You know, really projecting and getting
it's
the points.
From middle school.
Tell us what the teach-in. What do you teach in the teach-in?
We essentially went through, people were talking about when we first showed up about how the money goes from Wall Street to K Street. So we made a bunch of maps and said, okay, if you want to know where the money goes, we're going to make a map. Here's a map of the top lobbying firms in Washington. Here's a map we got it right here. I can show you.
You got addresses and everything?
Yeah.
It's all on your website?
We got it on a Google map. And in fact, if listeners are by a computer, you can check it out. It's snlg.ht/DC influence map.
If you lose, I'll put it on my website, marklevineradio.com. I'll stick it there so that if you can't follow all those map of letters, you'll see it there.
Yeah. Well, and what's, I think, important to note about this map and all the work that we do, we're very focused on making tools and providing information that's replicable. So we just use a simple Google map interface. They have something called My Maps. You can create a map of anywhere. So we looked up all the addresses of these lobbying firms and the various different super PACs, et cetera, that we present on this map using some of our own tools. And then we just made a map. Anyone can do that.
What is your main web page? Your main website again, your home page?
So our home site is sunlightfoundation.com. If you want to start looking into actually following the money and digging in, the two sites we suggest are reporting.sunlightfoundation.com and influenceexplorer.com.
And are there links on Sunlight Foundation to those?
Yes.
Sunlightfoundation.com. That's where you want to go.
That's easy to remember.
And then the neat thing about Influence Explorer in particular, and why one of the focuses of the teach-in was on this tool, is that allows you to look up the name of a firm, a politician, an individual, an organization, anything, and see their campaign contributions over. You can change it for a number of different range of years. You could see the issues that they care about and that they receive money on. You could see legislation that they have disclosed lobbying on. Any federal contracts they've received. There's a huge wealth of information to the extent that people are thirsty for that.
Yeah. And the other thing that was neat about what you were achieving is this was great teaching, but it was not one-sided. It was a discussion, and the people there had, for the most part, great questions. And if there was a question, there were other people that were participating in the answers because they had the information. There were people on Skype spreading the conversation around through Skype, et cetera. I mean, it was a collective thing. It was not just where you're going there to lecture. I don't mean to imply that at all. It was a real discussion with interested people.
I want to know if any of our politicians are not bought. I remember Russ Feingold ran for office, did not take PAC money, and lost recently. Is it the nature of the system that all of them, Democratic and Republican, are bought? They're just bought by different people? Or is there anyone out there that's, I guess you have to be independent.
Yeah, Russ Feingold.
Okay,
am I making my point here?
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders probably
is unemployed.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the nature of the system is that you know, if you want to be in the system, you sort of have to play by the rules of it. So, you know, I have not individually gone and looked up each member of Congress. But part of the other thing, right, is with super PACs, those people are not necessarily the whole point of Citizens United is that corporations and unions can spend unlimited amounts of money so long as they don't coordinate with the campaigns.
Right.
So actually, all of this money is being spent, and technically the candidate is not in control of it. And
right.
even if the candidate
so Mitt
said,
Romney can have his main campaign advisor, and then he can leave the campaign and then join
family.
The anonymous
PAC.
Yeah, right.
Family.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's family, but Democrats and Republicans do it. There's nobody's clean when it comes to this
it's
kind
the rules
of stuff.
Of the game.
No, the system is broken.
Going back to the whole super committee conversation, you know, half of those folks are Democrats. They haven't disclosed any of their campaign contributions.
Right.
Is there anyone we can praise particularly good?
Nope. Everybody, thumbs down.
Do I need to repeat this? We can praise Russ Feingold. And you see what happened.
Yeah, right.
He didn't play by the rules of the game, and now he's out of bounds. He got cut.
But even Russ just launched a pack. Right. So
really, to get back.
Yeah. Let me ask another question in terms of the different movements and everything else, and the difference between New York and Chicago and Washington D.C. and Boston, et cetera.
Wyoming.
Yeah, that's
a big difference between all those cities in Wyoming.
I told you
that
we can
lot,
speak
Nicole.
In unison.
Yeah, I'm trying to ask a serious question.
I don't know how many listeners we have in Wyoming, but
six.
We care about you.
Yes.
That's
the if there is a focal point for this. Effort, everything else for by all these people. I mean, should it be? And this is a question. I mean, if we have a government run, if we have a corporation run government, should the focus be at the corporations, basically at Wall Street with the banks and everything else? Should the focus be at the lobbyists? I mean, the easy answer is all of them. But, you know, it's the corporations, aren't it? Even more than the politicians who are, forgive this horrible word on the air, but the enemy. Is it not the corporations at this point that we really need to be picketing and fighting against?
Well, not to harp too much on a point, but I mean, the problem is we need more transparency. We don't necessarily know exactly where all the problems are if we can't see them. Just being forced to disclose all this information is probably the best, you know, I don't know if
sunlight
it's the last
is
step.
The best disinfectant, perhaps?
Yes. Somebody knows their Chief Justice Brandeis.
Yes, that's right. Let me throw out an alternative.
I'm impressed, Al.
An alternate perspective from the system is broke and the government's broke. America's broke. You know, as an example, let me.
The top 1% have plenty of money.
Well, everybody.
Yeah,
right.
Come on.
No, let me give you an example.
Everywhere.
In Wisconsin, during the last governor's race, a lot of the people there sat home and they got a governor that did things that they didn't want. They're part of it. They're, you know what I mean? As the voters are part of it, they sat home, they got a guy there who was a right-wing wacko, and then they're now fighting to overcome the mistake they made of not going to the polls so they wouldn't get Scott Walker. So the system is not, you know, we have to say, you know, sometimes we look in the mirror and we don't like what we say. I mean, what we see.
Or say.
Yeah, or say, for that matter, but we just don't say it in the mirror. But... if that makes any sense. But I'm saying this. America's broken.
There he
does. Quiet, Mark.
Yeah.
Garland is trying to be profound.
Go ahead.
That's right. I'm trying to be philosophical here.
Yeah, right. Go. You know,
we're broken.
What I'm saying. America's broke.
We do.
I think part of it is it's so easy to say the government's broken, blame everybody else. But we're part of it. And at some point, and this is what I like that what these protesters are doing.
Amen.
They're actually doing something by taking to the street. But at some point, we have to take some liability. I mean, some accountability. Liability is you, but accountability.
Responsibility.
Yes. And say that, you know, there's nobody in there that wasn't voted in. There's nobody up there that wasn't voted in. None of those people just walked in. I don't care.
George W. Bush wasn't voted in.
Okay, well, no. I changed that. Throw the whole thing in. But he's not
but
there.
Everybody else.
But he's not there anymore.
But his point is valid. Any government is by the consent of the people. Now, that may mean that the consent is suppressed or whatever, but it is by the consent of the people.
A nation of sheep begets a government of wolves.
Yeah. But I think this is a positive thing about what I'm seeing on the streets now, and I think what you guys are seeing, is not only just... the people are just doing it on their own.
Yeah.
They're not being told to do it. They're
That's
not
right.
even being necessarily asked to do it.
Right.
They're just deciding, wait a minute, I want to be part of this.
There's something beautiful about that.
There really is.
And
there
just
really
to speak to the last point, you know, in our grand vision for Sunlight, we see transparency as becoming a value. So if we have such low voter turnout, of course, you know, not all of the best values that we want for politicians are going to filter through. But as more engagement picks up, as more information comes out, and people can kind of begin to have clarity on, like, wow, so if I needed to see into the system, I have to value this. Oh, this candidate is not reflecting my best interests. I mean, this is a longer view, but that's something that we believe in as amplified in this, but also in just kind of our hopeful progress.
And, but there does seem to be also, I mean, the little bit I've seen, there does seem to be, it's not a doctrine at all, but there does seem to be a nonviolent aspect to all of this, too. And, you know, those of us who study a little bit of history know that the incredible power, a lot of pain, perchance, but the incredible power because of that. This is not like the Tea Party movement that I've seen, when the Tea Party is just anger and shouting and, you know, everything else and hysteria and packing 16 guns and, you know, all of that. This is the total antithesis of that.
Well, here's my question for the two beautiful ladies that are sitting with us. How do we make campaign finance sexy? How do we make C4s and lobbying and the miasma of this person gave $100 million? You know, I mean, John Kerry had, I think, would have been a great president, or at least far better than George W. Bush, but he put everyone to sleep, and so no one actually heard what he had to say. How do we deal with the fact that some of this stuff is actually boring?
Policy is boring.
You're young, vibrant people. Help us. How do we make people care about money and politics?
Well, I think that this movement, I mean, part of the reason that we're so excited is that this movement is kind of doing it for us. So we're jumping on the bandwagon to, you know, engage with people on this, because it usually is something that is hard to get people really pumped about. But part of it is, you know, the reason that we made a map is that it's easier to connect. You know, if it's a nameless, faceless corporation somewhere, that's a really hard thing to connect to. But when it is, you know, right, you know, if you can actually go on a little walking tour of where these places are, that's really important.
Walking tours. We should have corporate lobbying walking tours.
Yeah.
What are you seeing in terms of students?
That's because, we should have a walking
tour. You
know,
Mark made the point, and it's kind of unfortunate, but it's true. I mean, it really is your generation that has to solve this problem. I mean, it can't be.
Our generation. Our generation created it.
Yeah,
so
right.
You guys.
Terry's generation was high all
the time. So what are you all going to be doing while we're off solving this?
Well, we're going to be there with you, but I mean, it really. I mean, you know, the other thing that I
getting
see.
Getting in your way.
Yeah, right.
No.
Eating our free food.
Eating
your
free food.
Jesus.
What I can tell you very honestly, what I could see, and it's the same thing when you're teaching. I mean, you know this. There's an energy level, you know, in younger students. I mean, whether it's middle school and it's impossible, or whether it's on the streets with a protest, there's energy.
It's always young people. The movement's always.
And, you know,
and always should be.
Are you seeing the students really getting involved in this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And more, sort of every day, there's different groups that have been starting to organize, you know, student groups to come down and participate. And I think there's actually some folks at Maryland College Park are talking about doing a day of action in support of the Occupy movement. I'm not really looped into that very deeply. But, yeah, we're seeing more and more students get excited about it and come out and start to talk about it.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I'm going to speak tomorrow morning to a high school class about it.
Ah,
so,
wow, good.
Teachers
good.
Are taking note and students are taking note. And it's a
good.
Thing
you mentioned good, social good. Media is the way that people find out about this. So where should they go? Look, Twitter, hashtag Occupy DC.
Occupy DC. And then there's @ Occupy K Street, and that's ST.
Okay.
Are where people are going.
Is there a Facebook page, I guess, somewhere?
There's a Facebook. OccupyDC.org is their website. But, you know, this kind of actually, the social media angle brings up when you talk about how do we make campaign finance reform and lobbying reform sexy. It's also just translating policy into language that anyone can get. And this is just about the occupation. It's about everything in general. When we communicate, somehow when we're on Twitter, we're clearer than we are when we're writing paper. You have different languages and voices.
We don't have many
things.
Characters. We got to be.
Right. But if you can convey a message that, and yes, these are complex issues, but you can start breaking it down for people.
And the general issue that everybody is feeling is, again, they're left out. And that's what you're hearing. They know they're left out of the system.
Right.
Let me ask you one other question, because we're running very short of time here. If there were, and some of us, we're trying to work on this, you know, to some degree. If there were a big rally things, you know, event, you know, and like we get John Conyers there, who's definitely on your side, believe me, and a few other people. Would the groups come together for, or is it too early for that, or what's your feeling on
and
that?
And if you want the Raucous Caucus to come out there, we certainly would love to help in any way we could.
What's your feeling on that? Would people respond, or are the groups a little bit too isolated?
Which
or?
Groups?
Any of the groups. I mean, would they come if there were
the Occupy movement?
Oh, I mean, the Occupy movements are talking to each other now, and they're figuring out more and better ways to talk to each other now. And there's it's really fascinating to watch as an organizer how they're developing the line between how do we all sort of stay you know, on the same page, but also have autonomy and make our own decisions. But they are all absolutely, you know, talking to each other. There's people sending, you know, with each group, there's people sort of coming from New York and saying, here's what we did in New York, take whatever you want of it, and then.
If we had a big rally in Washington, D.C., they would show up? Would people be coming from Wyoming, New York, et cetera, to march? Is it that point or not?
I don't know. And I don't know if we could say, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like an organism.
It doesn't just have to be one, too. I mean, this is kind of be a repeat thing.
Well, and this is also why, you know, because it is an occupation and not a rally. And that's
not
been one
march.
Of the powerful things about it, is that it sort of hasn't been. So I don't know.
You didn't mention Texas, Terry. Don't you want to come from Texas?
Don't mention Texas, period.
It's
a good show.
Don't mess with it.
If Texas wins the American League playoffs, and if they play against the St. Louis Cardinals, my home team, I'm going to have to really
get... He's not boring.
Anyway, we're out of time here, unfortunately. This is the Raucous Caucus. I am Terry D. Kester with...
Mark Levine.
And
Garland Nixon.
We're here every Tuesday at 7 at WPFW 89.3 FM.
Yeah, and we will be back at Ben's in 2 weeks. We'll be in the studio again next week. We had some major problems this week in getting down to the Ben's, so we're sorry to keep you out of that. But we will be there in 2 weeks. We'll be back in the studio here. We have our guest here, Nicole... Errol and Lauren Ellen McCann, both from Sunlight Foundation.
Hey, maybe we can get some Occupy DC people to come over to Ben's.
Well, that's what we were trying to do this time, you know. But we'll do it again in 2 weeks. And you guys will be talking to again because you've been fantastic. Thank you
Thanks
very
for
much.
Having us. We had a great
Our
time.
Pleasure. Brother Oz up next with the Jazz Collection. WPFW is here to serve you with the music and the message. We'll be back soon. Good night.